Today is Thursday, February 18th, 2010. It's 3:30 p.m. City Council will come back from recess. Carla, can you please call the roll?
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman? Leonard?
Here.
Adams?
Here. Quorum is present. We have a time certain, which is in a land use hearing. Can you please read the title for item number 250?
Appeal of East Columbia Neighborhood Association against hearing officer's decision to approve with conditions the application of Howard Brandwine and Jerry Geblin for a land division with concurrent environmental review and adjustments for a 49-lot subdivision at 9801 Northeast 13th Avenue, LU 09134484, LDSENAD.
Thank you, Carla. City Attorney Catherine Bowen.
Thank you. Before we begin the hearing today, I have several announcements I need to make. These announcements are required by state law and concern the kind of hearing we're having today, the order of testimony, and the scope of testimony. First, as to the kind of hearing, this is an on-the-record hearing. This means you must limit your testimony to material and issues in the record. You can't bring up anything new. This hearing is to decide only if the hearings officer made the correct decision based on the evidence that was presented to him. If you start to talk about new issues or try to present new evidence today, you may be interrupted and reminded that you must limit your testimony to the record. Second, in terms of order of testimony, the hearing begins with a staff report by the Bureau of Development Services staff for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, the City Council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The appellant will go first and will have 10 minutes to present the appellant's case. Following the appellant, persons who support the appeal will go next. Each person will have 3 minutes to speak to the council. The applicant will have 15 minutes to address the council and rebut the appellant's presentation. And then after the applicant, the council will hear from persons who oppose the appeal. Again, each person will have 3 minutes. Finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes to rebut the presentation of opponents of the appeal. The council may then close the hearing, deliberate, and take a vote on the appeal. If the vote is a tentative vote, the council will set a future date for the adoption of findings and a final vote on the appeal. If the council takes a final vote today, that will conclude the matter before the council. And finally, as to the scope of testimony, again, a reminder, this is an evidentiary hearing or an on-the-record hearing, and the evidentiary record is closed. This means you must limit your remarks to arguments based on the record compiled by the hearings officer. You may refer to evidence that was previously submitted to the hearings officer, but you may not submit new evidence today. If your argument includes new evidence or issues, the council will not consider it, and it will be rejected in the City Council's final decision. If you believe a person who addressed City Council today improperly presented new evidence or presented a legal argument that relies on evidence that is not in the record, you may object to that argument. And finally, under state law, only issues that were raised before the hearings officer may be raised in this appeal to the City Council. If you believe another person has raised issues today that were not raised before the hearings officer, you may object to the council's consideration of that issue. And that concludes the opening announcements.
Great. Does any member of the council wish to disclose any ex parte contacts regarding the matter before us? Does any member of council wish to declare any conflicts of any nature that would prevent them from hearing this matter in a fair and impartial way? Then we shall begin. Staff will have 10 minutes. Please come forward.
Good afternoon. This is the staff presentation to City Council regarding the land use appeal 09134484 LDSENAD. I'm Sean Brigetta, city planner with BDS, and this is Rachel Whiteside, also a planner. The applicant's proposal was, the purpose of this hearing is the appeal of the hearings officer's decision to approve a Type 3 land division with concurrent environmental review and adjustments, referred to as the Brandwine subdivision. The applicant is Mimi Dukas of Cardinaux WRG, representing property owners Howard Brandwine and Jerry Geblin. The appellant is Mary Helen Kincaid on behalf of the East Columbia Neighborhood Association. The applicant's proposal is for a land division review that includes 49 lots, three public streets, one stormwater outfall and a tract, and a recreation tract and wetland preservation tract. A concurrent environmental review for stormwater outfall in the environmental conservation zone was also reviewed, along with two adjustments. The first adjustment was to reduce the size of the required recreation area from 10% of the total site area to 10% of the developable area. The second adjustment was to waive the track requirements for wetland area preservation identified for fill under the Department of State Lands permit. The site is located on the west side of Northeast 13th Avenue, south of Marine Drive. The base zone is R10, single-dwelling residential. There's an environmental conservation zone over a managed drainage channel that runs on the southern property line. This area is within the East Columbia Natural Resource Management Plan. However, this plan does not contain additional development standards or approval criteria for the purpose of this land use review. This is a 2007 aerial photo. The area is a mix of residential, open space, and industrial uses. Immediately south, north and south of the Brandwine property are single-family developments. Slightly further south is almost a 29-acre open space owned by the Parks Bureau. The area west of Northeast 6th Avenue Drive is predominantly industrial development. This slide shows the applicant's preliminary land division plan. The 49 lots, public streets, and recreation tracts are contained on the east side of the site. The remainder of the site, shown in turquoise, is a wetland preservation tract, which includes the Multnomah County Drainage District Channel that runs along the southern property line. This is a photo of the site facing west towards the proposed wetland reserve. This is predominantly an open pasture that would be enhanced with wetland plantings through this proposal. This is also a view of the site facing east where the proposed development will take place. All existing development is proposed to be demolished under this proposal. In summary, the hearings officer approved an environmental review for the stormwater outfall, an adjustment to reduce the size of the recreation area, and adjustment to waive the track requirements for the wetland, and approved the 49-lot land division with associated development. The appellant presented 7 appeal points. My colleague Rachel Whiteside will address those points now.
The appellant first expressed concerns over a procedural error related to the mailed notice of hearing. First, the city code requires mailed notice 20 days prior to the scheduled hearing. This requirement was met by holding the hearing on November 30th, 2009. The hearings officer chose to also hold the hearing on November 23rd, 2009 because it was too late to mail notice of reschedule. The hearings officer, at the request of BDS staff and the Neighborhood Association, continued the hearing from November 23rd to the 30th. The hearings officer determined that an additional week would provide sufficient opportunity for concerned persons to participate in the hearings process. Lastly, the hearings officer does not have the authority to extend the 120-day review period and must work within state-mandated timelines. The appellant's second point is related to flood hazards and the applicable criteria for evaluating those hazards. The appellant cited sections of the building code that are applied at the time that a building or site development permit is requested. The zoning code does not require an application to address Portland City Code 24.50 as part of their land use review. Only those code sections listed in Title 33 as the applicable approval criteria related to flood hazards are addressed through this land use decision. The hearings officer found that the applicable criteria in PCC 33.630.100 could be met with conditions of approval. The hearings officer then included conditions of approval requiring a completed and inspected site development permit and requiring receipt of the final letter of map revision from the Federal Emergency Management Agency prior to final plat approval. These conditions ensure that requirements outside of the land use approval criteria will be addressed before development commences. The appellant's third point is related to special construction considerations that are found in the Erosion Control Code. Once again, these regulations are applied at the time a building or site development permit is requested. The zoning code does not require an application to address this as part of the land use review process. The hearings officer found that the applicable criteria for clearing and grading could be met with conditions of approval. PCC 10.30.030 would be implemented at the time of review and inspection of the site development permit that was required by said conditions of approval. If council has questions related to this or the previous appeal point, we do have site development staff in the audience today. The appellant's fourth argument is that impacts of construction traffic were not considered by the hearings officer. The hearings officer found that the applicable criteria in PCC 33.641, traffic impacts, could be met with conditions of approval. Construction traffic is not included as an evaluation factor in Chapter 33.641. It is considered a temporary impact not related to street capacity or intersection loads. At the time that a construction permit is requested, the city traffic engineer will then review and approve a traffic control plan that would dictate the flow of construction. And again, we also have PBOT staff here today if you have any questions related to this appeal point. In their fifth appeal point, the appellant argues that the stormwater management criteria do not adequately address the loss of tree canopy. The hearings officer found that the applicable tree preservation and stormwater management criteria could be met with conditions of approval. The tree preservation options in Zoning Code Chapter 33.630 were specifically developed to reduce erosion, siltation, and flooding, and to filter stormwater and reduce runoff. The applicant provided a stormwater report prepared by an engineer evaluating the amount of impervious surface identified on the site plan that was shown to you earlier. This report was reviewed by engineers in the Bureau of Development Services, Bureau of Environmental Services, the Multnomah County Drainage District, and accepted by the hearings officer. In their sixth appeal point, the appellant disagrees with the city's application of the environmental zones. Chapter 33.430 environmental zones only applies to areas mapped on the official zoning maps, which we've highlighted in green on the screen for you. The only proposed development within the mapped environmental zone is a stormwater outfall. The remainder of the proposed development, clearing and grading, and wetland mitigation is all outside of the mapped environmental zones. The hearings officer only has the authority to apply the environmental review criteria within the mapped environmental zones. Based on the currently adopted resource inventory, which is the Columbia Corridor Industrial and Environmental Mapping Project, the hearings officer found these criteria to be met. The additional inventories referenced by the appellant have not been adopted by City Council. Therefore, despite their more complete assessment of the general area, they may not be considered. In their seventh appeal point, the appellant requested the hearings officer apply Portland City Code 33.430.270, which requires a special evaluation by a professional, to the entire site. This code citation is found within Chapter 33.430, which again is only applicable to the mapped environmental zones. The applicant did provide several reports prepared by licensed professionals, which were reviewed by engineers for BDS, BES, and the Drainage District. Generally, the city staff act as the independent third-party review and only request additional evaluation when the circumstances are beyond the level of city-employed professionals. That was not the case for this site. Lastly, the appellant submitted written testimony to the council clerk on February 15th and cited issues with state-required permits and compliance with regional requirements, specifically Metro Title 13. I wanted to call out that the only way in which local jurisdictions play a role in the Division of State Lands permit process is through a land use compatibility statement certifying that the project is in compliance with the local comprehensive plan. The local jurisdiction does not have authority to determine if a request to the state is valid. The appellant also cited noncompliance with Metro Title 13. While it is true that that Metro maps habitat area that the city does not, this does not make Title 13 relevant to this proposal. Title 13 is only applied in specific review situations. The requested land division, environmental review, and adjustments are outside the scope of Title 13. Sean will now explain your council alternatives.
All right. In closing, the council has the following options: deny the appeal, uphold the decision of the hearings officer for approval. 2, overturn the hearings officer and uphold the appeal. This option will require adoption of revised findings. Please note, in addition to the appeal points already addressed, you may hear testimony from the Neighborhood Association that they are seeking to permanently preserve this site as open space. While council may direct the parties to explore this option outside the hearing process, we feel those negotiations should not necessitate a delay on making a decision on this land use case today. The applicant has many additional steps to take before any development can move forward. Ample opportunity remains for the neighborhood to negotiate with the property owner to purchase this property. And my last point is, staff would like to remind council that because the applicant did not waive the 120-day time limit, this appeal is on the record. The current 120-day deadline for a decision on this case is March 5th, 2010. A decision must be issued by the council before that date unless the applicant grants an extension. And like we said earlier, there's city staff here to answer questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now hear from the appellant for 10 minutes. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for coming in on a wonderful day. It was really hard walking inside this building. I'm Mary Helen Kincaid. This testimony is on behalf of the East Columbia Neighborhood Association. We submitted very detailed testimony in documents previously, and so I'm going to hit those highlights. She has some slides for me that I'll get to in a minute. The staff touched on a number of our areas that we want to focus on in our testimony. One of them is the procedural errors. The notification of the land use hearing was mailed on November 6th for a November 23rd hearing. It didn't allow us the 20-day notice. The neighborhood contacted staff and told them of the error. BDS and the hearing officer decided on the date of November 30th, which fell on the Monday after Thanksgiving. So the previous week allowed us 3 days because the city was not open on Thanksgiving or Friday, so we didn't have access to information. There were also staff reports that were completed on November 20th, and we wouldn't have had access to those until November 23rd, which was the day of the hearing. And that was a site development response on the site, which had several comments in regard to stormwater reserves. So that kind of handicapped us and made our – this is a very complicated case, and so it made our case even more difficult. On the issue of the DSL permit, I'm going to have to defer to legal experts on this one because what I've been informed by the state DSL that did the evaluation on the site, Mike McCabe, was that the city reviews the application for purpose and need, and the purpose and need stated in the DSL permit was that there was a shortage of buildable sites. This permit application was filed in 2007, and that there was a shortage of buildable sites, and there was a need for residential housing in the city of Portland, and that was the need to fill the wetlands and use that area for the 49 buildable lots. It was his interpretation that the city could review that because the permit has not been filed and has not been finalized and has not been paid for. So that at that time, the city can evaluate the condition of the land and is it more important to build houses or can the houses be built around the wetlands? Is there another alternative analysis that can be done? And the state has conditions for alternative analysis and building sites. The permit has been extended 3 times, and according to emails in the file, it is now extended till July of 2010, based on emails back and forth between the landowner's consultant and the state. As of December 8th, I haven't checked the DEQ 401C permit, which is needed for the stormwater outfall. That was in a status of denied for non-payment of the application, and I don't know if that has been brought up to date. I would suspect that that would be the responsibility of the city to make sure that happened. And the Corps of Engineers will not issue their work permit without the DEQ 401C3 permit, and the letter of from the Corps of Engineers cannot be issued without all the above. So it's been an educational process on how these permits stack up, but that's basically how I've been told that they are. One of the issues that we brought up was the loss of tree canopy. 70% of the trees on the property in that area are going to be bulldozed. 85% of that open land is going to be paved with impervious surface. And while we know that the staff rely on code and measurements and what I learned to be DBH, diameter at breast height, the equation is cutting down a 30-inch tree and putting in 3 2-inch trees doesn't have the same impact. And so the neighborhood wanted to make sure that there were ample studies done on what would happen with the loss of that massive amount of tree canopy on flooding on the neighboring properties. It also seemed counterproductive to remove 70% of the trees when the city has a lot of initiatives right now to protect and enhance urban forest and tree canopy, and then approve something that's going to cut down 70% of the trees on the property. We believe that the calculations for the amount of tree canopy removal and creating 85% of impervious services was not done. There's no statistics of what happens when you cut down all these trees and pave over all this property. Where's all that water going to go? You'll see in a little bit that there are some rather sizable ponds on the property, and we'd like to request that that be studied and reported. A geotechnical report on the property for soil saturation and stability was done in June of 2007, a dry month. There was no report done in a wet month for saturation, and that would be an important thing in a when this property, I thought that their map would have it, but it has predominantly flood zone, and that's why all the permits with FEMA are in place. So we would appreciate if someone would, if you could require that a test be done for soil saturation during a wet month. Neighbors submitted a number of letters about flooding, and it was minimalized in the hearings officer report as anecdotal. They're the people that live there. The city staff aren't there. The people that are there to do a report aren't there. But they're the ones that have sump pumps and experience flooding on those neighboring properties in Meadow Drive. One of the letters was from Alan Orr, who was a previous police commander in Northeast Precinct, and he was the one responsible for closing Marine Drive in 1996 during the flooding. So he witnessed the flooding firsthand in our neighborhood, and his concern is also for stormwater runoff and flooding. That's all part of the record, his letter. It is true that we requested a special evaluation by a professional because there's so many technical reports. The Neighborhood Association doesn't have the kind of money it takes to require that. And while we rely on city staff for those, I think there's some very technical issues that need to be evaluated, and we would like to see that and at that particular code 33-430-20 be enacted. A little history here. The city didn't protect this property in environmental overlays in the 1980s. It didn't look the same as it looks now. It's now more valuable than they mentioned the natural resources inventory, rates it as significantly high value. Metro's Title 13 recognizes it as and has marked it as significantly high-value habitat, or medium to high habitat, and in need of being protected. And while I know that you heard that those are not legal binding ratings, they can also be used to inform a decision and evaluate the property so that we can make a decision, is this the best way to utilize this property? It doesn't have to be legally, but it should have been considered in an evaluation of the property by staff. I don't know how to work this. This button. Arrow key. Up, down. Oh, are you seeing pictures? Okay. This is a Meadow property. You'll see it a map at the end. I'm not a PowerPoint wizard, but there's deer in this field, and this is where approximately six houses will be. This is looking west, standing on 13th, looking into the property. This whole area will be houses. This is one of the wetlands that will be filled in, probably about 6 to 7 feet deep. It'll be filled with fill and houses built on top of this. This is looking to the left of that same pond to get a size. I couldn't get it all in one frame. Again, further in deep, I don't know if you can see the pond, but it's pretty sizable there. Usually geese on there, but it was a rainy day, so they weren't out that day. This is my poor attempt, but this is the same drawing that you saw presented earlier. The first area is where that very large pond is, and then the other is where the deer in the meadow and the wetlands area is. So it kind of gives you an idea of what's being displaced, the amount of trees, et cetera. What we would like the city to do is reject the hearings officer decision and recognize that the procedural errors occurred which could have affected the outcome of the hearing. Require a geotechnical report to be done for the area that measures soil saturation levels during a rainy wet month instead of a dry month. Require a measurement be done by BES of soil saturation levels projecting the proposed tree removal and 85% increase in impervious surfaces so that neighboring properties aren't impacted by increased stormwater runoff. Request an updated transportation analysis that addresses the impact of construction traffic on the one road that runs north and south in our neighborhood. The original transportation analysis was done in 2007 and did not include construction traffic. We'd like to have the city clarify, because there seems to still be confusion over the statement and the DSL permit and the purpose and need that... Can I just
You're
have
out of
like,
time. Thank you very
can
much.
Can I just have 1 minute?
Okay, or I can allowed come. To, am I? It's 10 minutes each.
As long as you can make up time.
A minute.
Okay, I'll read. I want to get through this because I have a really good point at the end.
Okay.
And I also want to evaluate the impacts of the new FEMA enforcement of rules. They're now studying limiting impervious surface building types and other developments in floodplains, and there's several states that have cases pending about building in floodplains, and to appoint a special evaluator. But the most important thing I wanted to suggest today is to be able to do the right thing by this property, and I don't think there's a person in the room would disagree with we should make this a nature preserve. We should do something really unique here. We should build a nature preserve with a sustainable Street of Dreams homes. These homes could be built around the wetlands. There's all sorts of alternative analysis kinds of things that could be done. And the educational opportunities for this are great. Alternative building would preserve the natural habitat. There's opportunities for PSU to do environmental education, for sustainable building, for wetlands reclamation studies, environmental studies. And there's been my preliminary conversations with a number of stakeholders has been great support and think that that would be a great use of the land. The landowner would get his revenue off of his investment, and the city would get an inner city urban preserve that is virtually unmatched in the United States. I'd like to see the city take a lead role in proposing this to make the architecture fit the land and not the land fit the architecture. Instead of carving out a big hole in the land and putting cement and houses on top of it, I'd like to see the houses fit there. And there's a perfect example, Salish Ponds in Troutdale, that they did this. And so if nothing else happens today, we'd like to see a commitment from the city to preserve the significant natural habitat and do something really innovative and unique that would benefit a number of people. So thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, we have supporters of the supporters of the appellant. Do we have, how many people do we have signed up?
We have 4 people signed up.
Okay.
First 3, please come on up, are Gary Clifford, Chet Antonson, I believe it is, and Kathy Humble.
Hi, welcome to the City Council. Glad you're here. You just need to give us your first and last name, and that clock in front of you and the big hunk of wood will help you count 3 minutes. You also need to disclose if you are a lobbyist for anybody.
Why don't we have Simone Goldfelder come on up then?
Or if you're speaking for yourself. So why don't we begin with you?
My name is Kathy Humble. I'm one of the neighborhood residents who's just anecdotal. I'm speaking for myself. I've lived there for 31 years. I'd like to make 3 general points about the Brandmine property. The hearing officer's findings, 1, did not adequately consider short-term impact of ground cover loss during the process of shaping the land for development, short-term impact of 8,000 dump truck trips during the development process, long-term impact of removing 70% of tree canopy. All these factors put at risk a delicate environment and the drainage system that's necessary to keep it safe. Point 2, in reaching these findings, the hearings officer relied on inappropriate data, such as a 20-year-old natural resources management plan and geotechnical studies conducted during a dry month of a wetland. 3, today I'm hearing a repetitive shift of responsibility and timing from the council level of decision to the permit level. This technicality flies in the face of the reality of the Brandmine property. It's like being a little bit pregnant. The neighborhood deserves better. It deserves a more thorough consideration. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Gary Clifford. I'm a retired senior land use planner. I represented Multnomah County on the, I live in the neighborhood, and I represented Multnomah County on the Technical Advisory Committee, which developed Title 13 and Nature in Neighborhoods. I'd like to point out that the only reason why Nature in Neighborhoods approval criteria are not being applied to this property is the city asked for a delay of implementation. Metro's original deadline was 2009. There is now a two-year delay. It is during this delay in adoption of the code and the maps, as required by Metro's Title 13, is the only reason why the mapped high habitat conservation area and moderate habitat conservation area, which covers more than half of the property, is not being addressed. There are no city environmental zones on that part of the property. It is completely being missed. What I'm asking is at least that the condition, maybe a condition of approval, that would address how that inventoried resource that's being ignored. I could go on in terms of the timing and the particulars. This particular application is slipped right in between certain implementation requirements. And in fact, under this agreement with Metro, if this had been a planned development or a conditional use, Title 13 would have had to have been addressed. It is only subdivisions which are not being addressed. And I submit that a 49-lot subdivision has more impact than a conditional use or a planned development, and that's not being addressed in this application. I know it's not legally addressed, but I'm saying that the city's enforcement and participation in Nature and Neighborhoods is lost, and this is one of the prime piece of properties that's being lost in that regard. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Hi, welcome back.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Simone Goldfeder, and I live at 2975 Southwest Upper Drive in the Southwest. And I'm here today in support of this, in terms of in support of the neighborhood, because partly a lot of the issues, the environmental issues, are similar to some of the issues we address as well. Even though we don't necessarily have as much wetlands, we do have, you know, steep slope, trees. There's a lot of parallel issues. But specifically, I'm here to actually read the testimony of one Bonnie McKnight, who wasn't able to make it today. So she asked that I read this testimony for you. I wish to support the appeal by the East Columbia Neighborhood Association. I agree with the issues already explained by the East Columbia Neighborhood Association, but do want to note some further concerns with the Goal 5 and Metro Title 13 requirements for areas such as the one being considered for development. As noted in October 2008 article from the McClatchy News Service about questions raised in the Puget Sound area of Washington, FEMA and the federal government are being pressed to look at whether current construction allowed in floodplain areas jeopardizes habitat and to what extent. The article states, "At the heart of the issue is the National Flood Insurance Program, which for 40 years has regulated river corridor development but paid scant attention to endangered species. That could change. The jeopardy opinion from the National Marine Fisheries Service in Seattle, coupled with an injunction blocking development in Florida that threatens the habitat of the endangered key deer, might force major changes in the federal insurance program. The Fisheries Service even suggested a temporary moratorium on buildings in floodplains surrounding Puget Sound. The timeout would allow the Federal Emergency Management Agency, which administers the flood insurance program, to sort out with state and local jurisdictions what, if any, new building restrictions may be required."
Excuse me, Mayor Adams. I'm informed by staff that there is no testimony in the record before the hearings officer on the FEMA issues that are being discussed now, or in at least at this level of detail. Not this particular issue. So...
Okay, I will end then.
Thank you all for your testimony. Carla?
That's all who signed up in support of the appeal.
Okay, so we are now at the principal opponent. We'll have 15 minutes. Good afternoon. Welcome to the City Council.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Mimi Dukas. I'm with Cardno WRG representing Howard Brandwine in the Brandwine Meadows application. Primarily, I have to start by saying that we concur with staff significantly in the response to the appeal items that have been brought up by the Neighborhood Association. So I will beg your patience in doing a bit of repetition from what staff went through. I just want to make sure that we are, in fact, on the record in our rebuttal points. I've also provided a letter, which also summarizes these rebuttal points as well. First of all, we've heard that there are concerns about the procedural issues. There was a procedural error that really was addressed through the provision of a second hearing, the same amount of time. In fact, they received additional time for public testimony and review of the public records through that second hearing. Beyond that, the hearings officer provided a 9-day written rebuttal period, which gave an additional 2 days of response testimony. So they've had adequate opportunity to respond to the application itself. There's been a bit of testimony about the flood hazard area and the applicability of Title 24. Staff is correct. This is really a building code issue. In regards to the concerns about the flood hazard area in general, regardless of the code citation of 24, there are code sections in 33 that apply. The floodplain was, in fact, reviewed by FEMA through the floodplain alteration request and through the letter of map revision application that's been reviewed by FEMA. The floodplain is established by FEMA. They are the ones who govern it. And it's not based on our geotechnical report. So the concerns about our geotechnical report being prepared in summer months is not really germane to the flood hazard area. There are also questions about the construction considerations that were recommended in the geotechnical report. There's a series of recommendations. The appeal stated that they are concerned that those will not be followed, that they were not talked about in the hearings officer decision. Those are still binding for our civil engineer or whichever civil engineer will be submitting construction documents for this application. Once it reaches that point, a civil engineer would have their license at risk if they ignored those geotechnical recommendations. That is the relationship between the two sets of engineers. So those recommendations will still be binding on those construction plans. There are concerns about the amount of construction traffic. Staff is correct. This is really not an applicable approval criteria, but we also address that in our hearings officer presentation in the fact that we estimate, based on the amount of earthwork activity that needs to occur, there will be about 20 trips per hour during the construction period. This is less than the 37 a.m. peak or the 49 p.m. peak volumes that were estimated in the traffic study. Stormwater concerns were raised in regards to the amount of tree removal that is involved. Tree removal doesn't entirely affect the stormwater analysis. The stormwater analysis assumed that there would be no infiltration whatsoever, that the groundwater table is, in fact, high enough that there is no infiltration. So trees absorbing water is not really a stormwater, a flood event factor. That is a slow absorption of water. When you're dealing with a flood event, that is a short-term event, and the soil saturation is where you really have the chance for land to percolate into the soil. As I said, the stormwater analysis assumed no infiltration whatsoever due to that high groundwater table. The concerns about the geotechnical report being prepared in the summer months, that report, whether it's done in summer or winter months, looks at the soil profile and how water will interact with that soil profile. They analyze it according to that. So it doesn't actually matter if that is completed during wet months or dry months. That is the expertise of the geotechnical engineer. And as staff pointed out, the assumption that the site will be 85% impervious is simply incorrect. Over half the site's being preserved as a wetland tract. So that's fairly obvious. There were questions about environmental review and the appropriateness of that. Staff is correct. Again, this is really regulated by the overlay zones of the C and P zones We have addressed that. That's why we had to do an environmental review application to accommodate our stormwater outfall. This issue in the appeal was muddled a bit with some of the other mapping that exists out there, and whether or not the East Columbia Natural Resource Management Plan is the correct guiding document in terms of habitat. We did, in fact, provide findings in regards to the East Columbia Natural Resource Management Plan, which is the adopted document. The appellants have questioned whether Title 13 is applicable because that is more accurate or it is better mapping. Regardless of your opinion of the quality of the mapping, your adopted document in place and the guiding rules that go with that are still go back to your mapped C and P zones and to your adopted East Columbia Natural Resource Management Plan. The appellants have also requested a special evaluation by a professional. This is not.
Can I follow up on that for a second?
Yes.
I guess I still don't understand the point that's being raised in your rebuttal. If Metro Title 13 had not been delayed and if it were applicable to this site, would there be an additional legal basis for us to challenge the application?
I don't know. I have not looked at the actual mapping of Title 13 because it wasn't applicable. So I don't know exactly what that mapping is. I don't know how the rules work for it. It wasn't something I was required to look at, so I don't know. Special evaluation by a professional. This is not a criteria that says it's a hard application. We need to get an outside person to review it. You have very, very qualified city staff that help provide that third-party independent review of the technical documents that we submit. We submit high-quality documents by registered, certified professionals, engineers, geotechnical engineers, traffic engineers, geologists, arborists, landscape architects. All of those have been certified, licensed professionals. You also have staff that is licensed and certified that provided a third-party review, and in many cases, we received a state review on top of it. There is not an aspect of that that warrants an outside review. There is no technical expertise that is not contained within City Hall that's applicable to this application. In the testimony we heard this afternoon, it was also brought up that it's believed that the habitat today that is out on that property is actually better than it was 20 years ago. And that was trying to pull it back into this Title 13 question. I think that's actually a good segue into the bigger picture of what this application is and why it's before you today. Dr. Brandwein is not a typical developer. This was actually his home for many, many years before he moved to Southern California for a warmer climate in his retirement years. While he lived in this home, he actually did the environmental improvements and enhancements to the wetland area because he believed it was the right thing to do. It was his home, it was his land, and it was something he believed in. That is in the area contained within the Wetland Preservation Tract. He is not out to create a development to rape and pillage and get every last penny out of this property. This is his retirement plan. He did it with sincerity in his heart. I know that doesn't factor into the criteria, but I want you to understand the context of what's before you today. There's discussion about the idea of creating the ability to preserve this site into some sort of nature preserve beyond what's proposed today. Dr. Brandwein is open to that. That's a separate conversation. It does match his heart, but we need to set that aside from what is before you today. But this is a very heartfelt application. It meets the criteria. It's been a very long process. There's been a lot of scrutiny every step of the way from the zone change before my firm was involved, through the subdivision, through the neighborhood outreach that we've done. There is a lot of analysis that's gone into it. I understand the frustration from the Neighborhood Association. It is a lot to absorb. But the amount of review is substantial. And you've heard it from staff, you can see it in the documentation, and you can see it through the statewide review. This is a tested application, it meets the criteria, and it will be a good development someday if this is actually what moves forward. So aside from that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you have. And that concludes my presentation.
Any discussion from council? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, we will now hear from other opponents.
We have two people signed up, Theanne Capald and Chet Antinson.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi, welcome. How are you?
Thank you. My name is Theanne Capald. I'm a cousin of Dr. Howard Brandwein, and I currently reside at 9801 Northeast 13th Avenue. He wasn't able to be here, so on his behalf, I'm reading this letter to you. Honorable Mayor and City Council, it has always been my intention to leave this property better than I found it. To this end, without any mitigation credit, I partnered with the Portland Bureau of Environmental Services in 1997 and developed 5 acres of wetlands. I continue to maintain and protect those wetlands. My plan for Brandwein Meadows is that the developer establishes a homeowners association that will maintain and protect the existing and new wetlands in perpetuity. To obtain conditional subdivision approval, I complied with every requirement presented by the City of Portland. I believe my concept for Brandwein Meadows is environmentally sound and that this development will enhance wildlife habitat and the neighborhood. Respectfully, Howard Brandwein.
Thank you very much. Hi.
Hi there. Chet Antinson, 22311 Erickson Road, Bend, Oregon. I'm the president of Pacific Western Homes, and I developed Blue Heron Meadows, which is immediately across the wetlands and east of 13th Avenue. It had a lot of similarities. It was about a 30 to 32-acre piece, and we created and enhanced many wetlands and built 104 homes. I believe what Howard and his consultants have laid out is an extremely sound method of developing this property. He would love to sell it to somebody that could keep it in a wetland conservancy or such. However, that's not a choice, or that's not on the table today. We dealt with the same things. We weren't fortunately appealed to City Council, but we went through the same things with the neighborhood, the concerns of traffic on the roadway. We had to photograph all of the roads in the area because we also hauled in about 60,000 yards of fill. We didn't damage a single road in the process. I also befriended many of the neighbors that had lived there before, and some, in fact, during the Vanport incident. And they told me that after we developed, the water situation, the flooding situation, diminished in their basements because when you develop one of these subdivisions, you put in thousands of feet of pipe, which are all bedded in rock, which become large French drains in essence. So I think those, I think the neighborhood association means well, but I think a lot of these issues will not come to pass that they have with it. I think also I heard the 85% impervious surface. That's I don't even think there would be 85% of the piece developed, which is only 10 acres of, I believe, 30 acres. So I think it's more like probably a 10% impervious surface when you consider the entire project. Relative to wildlife habitat, I think, again, in keeping about 20 acres in wetland or 18 acres in wetlands, and open space, I think you're creating or maintaining a large wetland, I mean, a large wildlife habitat. This is only a few hundred feet from Children's Arboretum, which is another open space park. I think it, if they could come together with Howard Brandwein and buy it, I think it's great. But to just set it aside, I think, is probably not realistic because 49 lots is a very low impact on an area like this.
Thank you both very much. All right, we now have the appellant rebuttal for 5 minutes.
Can I get this picture back up again of this? I'm going to speak first to the 85%. The yellow area is all now open space, grass, and trees.
And so that's what would now be paved over. So I think it's not 10%. I think it's closer to the 85%. And I can't find where I got that figure, but it was out of a document that was submitted. And so that's where the 85% came from. The green space in there is 1 acre. And that's a recreation track required because the applicant, all the previous applications for this property were planned developments. But when the Title 13 Metro issue came to fruition, this became a subdivision because it would not be covered by the Title 13. And to my best knowledge, to answer your Title 13 question, the city would have could use environmental zoning. It would adopt Title 13, and then this property would have been protected because the area, the ratings that Title 13 has given this property would put it in line with environmental protection zones. I have a map. I don't know. It's in a whole bunch of previous testimony of the area, so this whole blue area would be protected. A couple of rebuttal things. The amount of review is substantial. The amount of reports are substantial. They were all submitted by the landowner. None of them were independent reviews. Were reviewed by city, but none of them were independent reports, so that all of the statistics were based on landowners' collections, consultants. The effect of tree canopy and saying that cutting down over 300 trees, most of those trees are Lombardy poplar and some are cottonwood, and they're all known to absorb a lot of water. And to say that that wouldn't have any effect on water absorption is contrary to everything that's in the Portland Plan Urban Forest and the Natural Resources Inventory information, the elimination of trees. I think I submitted in prior testimony from Urban Forestry Commission gave me a, said that a 30-inch diameter deciduous tree absorbs about 3,000 gallons of, I think it was, I was rifling through my papers, and but it, about 3,000 gallons of water a year, so multiply that by 300, and that's how many gallons of water wouldn't be absorbed. I'm not a scientist, but I don't know that soil saturation is the same in a dry month than a wet month. My common sense tells me that there's a lot more groundwater. I live in Blue Heron Meadows. Our backyard and front yard are historically puddled this time of year and not during the summer, so I think the soil saturation changes, and that's why the request to have those testings was done. The Children's Arboretum is not at all connected to this property and could not be because BES has said that they don't want this wetlands track that you see. Sorry. That was my little quote thing. The wetlands track to the left of this, BES has requested that it only be a viewing station there and that there be no connectivity and no human activity in that area. And the Children's Arboretum is further to the west, and there's no way to get that. There would have to be a bridge over a Multnomah County drainage district. So that option is not available, and that would not be a public area. I'd like the city to clarify the relationship between the state and city on the DSL permit. I've gotten contrary information and from the state, according to the city. The Natural Resources Inventory and Metro 13, we've gone round and round on this. The city has the information. In the fall of 2009, it was the Natural Resources Inventory was adopted for the Airport Futures Plan, and that went to 13th, which is this property is directly west of. And so it, this property was not included, I'll admit, was not included in the Natural Resources Inventory, but if you look at the overall nature and habitat, it's all pretty much the same. And as the city moves forward with the wetlands inventory and continued natural resources inventory for the South Shore Plan, this area would be in there. So I think I answered all of the questions. Are there any questions?
I have one question, if I could, yeah. Mayor. You've alleged a procedural violation. Have you been prevented from putting any additional arguments forward that you would have been able to advance if you had had an extra day or week notice? In other words, is there any issue that's not before us that you've raised that would have been raised if in your that you argue would have been raised or could have been raised if you had had more time?
I would have done more research on the permit issue, and especially on FEMA and building in a floodplain. But that's so complicated, and it took so long that we sort of had to pick and choose our battles. There's a whole federal insurance. It's FIRM. I forget what it stands for. And there's a whole bunch of stuff out there, and it's sort of beyond me. And as testimony, Bonnie McKnight has been kind of following that because of a whole issue with Columbia South Shore. So that was why that was brought up. But
putting aside that question for a second, okay. Are the seven arguments that you've advanced here, do you believe those are your seven best arguments?
The best we could do, yeah, without paying expert consultants.
Thank you very much.
Anybody else?
Thank you very much. All right. Now we're at council deliberations. Any questions for staff?
I have one question for staff, Mayor.
Could you please come forward?
Could you address the concern that's been raised about the tree canopy and the 70% of the trees that would be removed for this subdivision? And just for my benefit, give me the context for understanding how that issue falls within the approval criteria, and if there is a an issue that we need to grapple with there.
Chapter 33.630 in the zoning code is the tree preservation chapter. They are applicable approval criteria for a subdivision review or a plan development review, in this case a subdivision. There are five tree preservation options available to the applicant. They can include tree preservation by canopy count or by DBH, diameter at breast height. The proposal meets two of the options out of the five, which there range from preserving 35% of the total DBH on site to less than that, but including more significant trees. And there's a list in the code of what are considered significant trees. The applicant is required to provide a report by a certified arborist as part of their application. That was included as a hearings officer exhibit. No, they get to choose which of the five they want to meet. And again, those five options were written as part of the zoning code to specifically address erosion, filtration, infiltration of stormwater. So the 30% or 35% is deemed adequate under the zoning code.
And also, because this is a public hearing and someone may be watching, would you please just officially state for the record what the standard of review is, what we need to apply here?
The standard is Chapter 33.630, tree preservation.
No, I'm sorry, for this hearing. So the council review, what is the question before us?
The question before you is to either uphold the hearings officer's decision and to deny the appeal, or to uphold the appeal, thereby overturning the hearings officer's decision. And you could adopt revised findings as part of that.
The burden of proof is, though, on whom?
At this point, the burden of proof is on the appellant. The applicant has already proven to the hearings officer that the approval criteria have been met, and the hearings officer has determined that the appropriate approval criteria have been met.
So we'll entertain motions.
Mayor Adams, I wanted to clarify that if the council is inclined to uphold the hearings officer's decision, we'd recommend that you make a tentative decision today because we'll need to modify the findings slightly to respond to some of the arguments that have been raised on appeal.
Okay.
Mayor Adams?
Commissioner Leonard.
I move to deny the appeal and uphold the hearings officer's decision for approval of the proposal.
I'm going to second that, and if we could have a brief council discussion here.
So moved and seconded. Let's have a discussion.
Mayor, I want to acknowledge that the opponents who've appeared today have in good faith presented some arguments and some issues for our consideration. And and I think they have thoughtfully presented a number of concerns. The question before us, though, is whether the burden of proof was met below by the applicant and whether the burden of proof is on appeal met by the opponent. And the concern that I have is that there are two